The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
The amount of people looking for Andy Moore around Positano, it was all the rage. They're asking him what he's going to do next. When's the next episode out? The Football Pod's gone international.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
And we are delighted to be joined this morning by Paul McGrath, an ambassador for Repac's Team Green. Paul, good morning to you. How are you getting on?
Morning, Jerry. Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Minding myself.
Well, that's good. That is good. There's loads for us to talk about. We were talking earlier on about Jaap Stam and great centre-back play from the 1990s, and we figured you were coming on, so we might talk to you a little bit about that as well.
No problem.
There was one question we were asking Kenny earlier on. Somebody had texted in, if you had to pick one, Stam, Vidic or Ferdinand to play alongside, who would you pick? He picked Jaap Stam. Who would you pick?
I think I'd go along with what he said.
Stam. You're a Jaap Stam fan too, ahead of Ferdinand and Vidic.
I have to be honest, yeah, I would be.
Splitting hairs really here, Paul, aren't we?
Yeah, to be fair, they're all very close, but yeah, if you had to pick one, Jaap would have been the one.
What did you like about Stam as a defender?
Just no nonsense, just take the ball off you and go on up the pitch and join in. And he had that Dutch thing where they thought they were brilliant footballers as well, but he actually was one of these people who did his job at the back perfectly. And then if he could join in, he would do that as well. So he could score a few goals as well. So, yeah, I would have thought out of those three, Rio obviously, I'd met when I was nearly joined West Ham, and he was unbelievable. But having said that, I just think Stam would have just shaded him a little.
Paul, you weren't there part Dutch, were you? Taking the ball off centre forwards and dribbling up the pitch, a bit like Stam.
No, I didn't. I had one or two goalkeepers who used to think they could pass the ball to me, and I just turned me back and walk up the pitch. To be honest, Kenny. No, because there's certain players who know they can do it because they're a little bit cocky, and some of them think they can. And I wasn't one of those, because every time the ball was passed to me, you'd have an Ian Rush sprinting at you or something, and it would frighten the life out of me.
Well, it's interesting, Paul, you say that, because you obviously watch a lot of football, the modern game, in terms of how the game's evolved, particularly for defenders now. A bit like myself, you see kind of the onus that's been put on them when keepers in possession to drop to the edge of the 18-yard box, even to the edge of the 6-yard box now, and look to play in that area of the pitch, even under pressure. And that's kind of demanded of defenders now. Would you have been comfortable in that environment, being asked to play in that manner?
No, I would have said, Kenny, to be honest, that is it's some of the most ridiculous football that I've ever seen, because it invariably ends up with someone taking it off them and putting it in the back of the net. I don't understand that part of the game that they're trying to, make normal in football. I don't think it's not a normal way to play football.
Yeah, it's amazing because you hear people speak like that. Maybe it's a different generation.
It's
but
different era.
But you're talked down, Paul.
Maybe
you're talked down. You're spoken about as being a bit of a Neanderthal. If you have those, if you advance that, and I'd do the same, to some extent, in terms of the amount of risk that you're taking and the reward that you get, as opposed to how much you're putting the ball at risk, I'd be probably very similar to you. But of course, people have kind of rolled their eyes if you make this argument. People are like, oh, look, you're a different generation, you're old school, Neanderthal, what do you know? Well, this is it.
Are you joining me on that?
Yeah, I do. I would, Paul, because I think the basic, probably what you are saying is kind of, I think the basic fundamentals of the game still haven't changed, if they kind of 20, 30 years on, particularly from a defensive point of view.
We're supposed to defend. We're supposed to give it to the people who can play in midfield. They're supposed to give it to the lads who score the goals up front. And I don't think, I've seen people now that can cross the ball into the goalkeeper's area, and they just turn out because they want their stats come up. So they want to know they've had a certain amount of touches on the ball and stuff like that.
Passes completed.
That's not the way I played football. I didn't grow up playing that way. So maybe I really am the dinosaur of this thing. But
I think Paul, you would have been able to play centre back today. You're like so when Jack played you in midfield, you had responsibility to get on the ball and pass the ball, and so you clearly were capable of passing the ball, and like I don't think there's anything Virgil van Dijk can do that you wouldn't have been able to do.
Oof.
Had you got that big doyag, Paul? Had you got that 40, 50 yard doyag?
That I can't. he's a one-off where he's so comfortable on the ball, he will take it from any part of the pitch. And he can pass the ball, obviously, way better than I could ever pass the ball. No, the players are obviously much more adapted at doing what their managers want them to do. But we played a certain way, and you just didn't pass the ball around the back because you knew there was going to be an in rush or a quicker player. Or, you know, they'd come in at you like a light and just take the ball off you and score a goal. Make you look foolish, basically.
It is amazing. Sorry, Paul, I was just going to say, in relation to actually just a basic art, to not so much in possession of the ball, but having a discussion with somebody over the last kind of couple of years in relation to the role of the centre-half and what your responsibilities were when you played as a centre-half. And I never remember playing defending my own half of the pitch. And maybe if you played kind of right side, which you would have done probably predominantly, if your right back kind of got drawn a little bit up the pitch and maybe a run was made in behind the right back, maybe an opposition midfield, you know, that third man run, Paul, into those area of the pitch. Well, you were expected, it was your responsibility as a centre-half to slide across and deal with that. I don't ever remember a situation as a centre-half where somebody would make that type of run and I'd be looking at my centre midfielder to drop into a full-back position and deal with that, and I could kind of hold my position in the central area of the pitch. And that's what you're seeing a lot now. Managers aren't asking their centre-halves necessarily to be good readers of the game and go and deal with those situations. Just stay in the centre of the goal, hold hands with your centre-half, don't be more than 10, 15 yards apart, and allow kind of centre midfielders to drop in there and do your job for you. So again, this is I never would have asked, I don't know about you, Paul, I never would have asked or expected my centre midfielders to go and do that.
But, well, I would have been a little bit different, though, to be honest, Kenny, because I always wanted to go in and help the lads at the back. You know, I genuinely wanted to drop into that centre-half position. If one of them ever got pulled out, Mick McCarthy seldom did, or he did quite often, actually, I should say. When he was running through and he used to want to clock someone or hit someone or whatever he wanted to do. But I used to just fill in for him as quickly as possible because it was so natural to me to be a centre-half anyway. So I just used to drop in. Mick could destroy someone in midfield or just kick him up in the air, whatever it was. And it seemed like we had it all planned. We had nothing planned, but this is the way it went. And I loved it because I could move out. I could move around in different positions and help the lads out in certain areas. But then, we just learned from each other and we found a bit of a method of dealing with all the movement that we got from other teams. Because other teams were always about this pass and move it up the field and all this sort of thing. But they got stopped quite often.
The pressing game that Ireland had under Jack Charlton is obviously something that has become very trendy, essentially in the last decade or so, as European coaches have made it very popular. In that aspect, was Jack something of an innovator, Paul, in that respect, in that he did expect his forward players to set the tone from a physical perspective, to put the defence under pressure, to coin a phrase, and that actually that was a very legitimate style of play and something, I mean, that I think certainly suits the Irish mentality.
Oh, very much so. And I mean, John Aldridge will back you up there as well, because he was the one player who actually got that role and made his own. He used to sprint across the pitch and go, you know, back the other side of the pitch. But it was so demanding that you could only do that a certain amount of times in a game. And I think when John and Ray came into the team, I think they changed the whole dynamics of the team. Andy Townsend would run himself into the ground as well. So we had a few players that were willing to do it, but I just think it took a toll on us when we went, '94. It took its toll on us when you can't do that in heat. And it flopped kind of a little bit badly there, but we still enjoyed it, and tried to do what we were told, and maybe it didn't work as well.
The midfield partnership that you would have had when you were in midfield before you went back centre back again. Who did you play with most in centre midfield? Was it Ronnie at the start and then Andy, or was it mostly Andy?
It was Ronnie in 88, I think it was Ronnie, and Ray Houghton played a lot as well, and then Kevin Cheedy was there as well. So I was missing the Russia game, I think I missed in 88, and that was the best football that I'd seen Ireland play. And I was sitting there, obviously, with my knee bandaged and all this sort of stuff, and I'm thinking, this is great. What we're doing now is absolutely brilliant. But then they were three of the greatest ball passers and ball winners and all this sort of stuff. And I hated being on the sideline, but I was jumping up saying, you know, well done when we scored the goal and all this sort of thing. And I'm thinking, well, I'm not getting back into this game. But but I was loving what they were doing. And it showed on that day against Russia that we could play against anyone in the world and match them.
It's funny too, because Houghton is obviously not an out-and-out winger, and Sheedy's not really an out-and-out winger as well, although he plays on the left side of midfield, that actually they could tuck in, they could play centrally in the middle of a game. So it was, again, quite a... Although Jack is derided for being very fundamental and basic in terms of his tactical approach, the players clearly on the field were capable of doing many different roles. Even the way you were talking about filling in for the centre-backs, like...
Yeah.
You know, that's the type of thing that, like, if Pep's central midfielder does it now, everyone's like, oh, look what Pep's doing. But actually, you know, you guys were incorporating aspects of that.
But I think Jack wanted us to play a certain way, and he didn't want us to be knocking around in midfield where people could win the ball and be coming at you. He knew we'd all drop into certain places. As soon as we lost the ball, everyone knew what they were supposed to do to stop the opposition scoring. And that was the brilliance of Jack, I think, that I knew, Jesus Christ, if someone makes a mistake in that midfield, I know where I have to run. I have to run towards Mick and Ken Moran to stop them, overwhelming us at the back and or scoring goals. I hate using this word now, but try and snap one of them in half so I can get the ball back to someone else.
Paul, do you mind me asking? Obviously, we enjoyed a huge amount of success under Jack. But do you think there's an argument? Of course, we'll never know. It's all pie in the sky. But in terms of playing that different brand of football, you mentioned there the Russia game. I've heard a couple of the lads, kind of Ronnie and Ray, over the years, talk about that as well and say exactly what you said there. Do you think we could have been as successful under Jack playing that different brand of football, more of a footballing type game, more possession-based, considering, like you said, the quality of players which we had? John Sheridan as well never used to get the team. John, what a good football player he was. Do you think we could have gone close to what we did under Jack playing a different way?
I love the fact that you mentioned him, because he was kind of ahead of his time but behind his time, because he wasn't so up with the squad, if you know what I mean. But he was, I remember he tried to chip the goalkeeper, I forget which game it was and all that, but even when he got the ball, he used to always hold the ball for a couple of seconds and just look round, and no one could get the ball off him. But so we had the players to do it, but we just, I don't know whether Jack wanted to free us up that much to let us play, to let us see could we match these people that we were the opposition. And then I think he would have got a shock if he'd have said, listen, today go out and play. If you want to play the football against them that you know you can play, see how it goes. And I think if Jack had done that, I think we would have maybe won even a few more games, because we had really some cracking footballers, seriously. I know. Yeah. We hated lumping it forward and then chasing it. But, John, to be honest, we didn't have to chase it. It was the lads up front that had to do all the running around and chasing and stuff like that. So
I mean, you can do both, can't you, Paul, in terms of when you haven't got possession, that kind of high intensity in terms of closing it down, you can do that. But when you win back the ball, it doesn't mean you have to play back to front direct early and get it in behind as well. You can get it down, make a few passes, keep possession and work the ball. You can have the best of both worlds, Paul, can't you?
But exactly, Kenny, and especially, I mean, you're a little younger than me, so you went through another stage of that where you know, Our lads showed that they could take the ball down with the Andy Reids and people like that, and they were really good footballers. And I loved Damien Duffer and Roy or
Robbie, yeah.
Robbie, geez, I think they said Roy Keane. Robbie Keane and Roy.
You could put Roy in there as well, yeah.
Oh, geez, of course I'm putting Roy in. But I mean, you've had a fabulous group of lads there, and they actually, and I was so proud because obviously you're proud because we're bringing a new group of kids in there who actually know how to play the football as well. But they did, and they lumped balls yeah. into the box as well. So
yeah,
and you remember
right.
that, I think, Kenny.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right, Paul. We probably, no disrespect to the lads, I played with some wonderful players, don't get me wrong, but probably yeah. didn't have the players from a technical point of view that Paul played with. But I thought we kind of, under Mick, we tried to mix our game up pretty well. We played with that intensity in terms of winning the ball back, as Paul's describing there, as they did under Jack. And in possession, it wasn't always the case of lumping it forward. Although that said, we did like to get the ball back to front early, getting it yeah. up to centre forward's feet, getting it down the side, squeezing up and playing in the opposition half of the pitch. And that's kind of disappeared a little bit from the game, for the reasons that we're saying earlier. Paul's talking about making passes, pass completion. He's never given the ball away, but yeah, he's never passed the ball forward either. You know, that type of attitude in the modern game. So.
Honestly, yeah. That is the problem. You know, but and then you guys kind of balanced the whole thing out for us, making it that we want to move up the field, we want to be knocking the ball around well. It looks like it's great football, but when you get to a certain point, you want to cross it in because you want to score a goal. You don't just want people to say, well, they're up this far, and now we'll walk it all back again towards our goal.
Yeah,
you've actually proved to us that well. And to be fair, you're a much younger team, I should say, Kenny. And you had a lot of really good players in that team. And that's the one that I thought would go that extra step again. And then everything kind of, well, a few things blew up.
Yeah, but the game hasn't. But if you look at all those teams, Paul, from yours through to my bit of time and teams, after certain fundamentals there for me, when you look at an Irish team, what type of performance do you want to see? And when I kind of shut my eyes and I picture it, when we're at our best, particularly from an attacking point of view, it is from getting the ball back to front. I'm not talking about smashing the ball through the air here, like hitting Hail Mary jobs.
Yeah.
Getting the
yeah.
ball back to front. But like Paul says there, getting it into wide areas. And I thought we've always been good and effective. Our biggest weapon has been crosses into the box. It's a simple thing to say, but little combinations down the side, good quality crosses into the box. And we've always had people. We had them with Cass, Quinney,
yeah,
Kevin Doyle.
But we don't at the moment. So if you think about the chances,
no,
that
no, I disagree. Disagree. You talk any type.
If you think about the big chances that we've missed in recent times, there's been a centre forward heading the ball over, or from a set piece, or even the miss against Slovakia comes yeah. from a cross as well. Like we are.
I'm not just talking about headers. We're not talking about good crossing. I'm not talking about crosses getting stood up to the back postage. Yeah, I'm talking about hitting the boil and cut backs, balls getting drilled across the 6 yard box, putting balls into the penalty. That's the ideal for me.
I think if you put the ball into the penalty area, it might get headed over, but geez, it might get headed in. If we're not scoring that many goals now, you may as well put it into the area. And see, does it get headed in? It might get headed over, but it might get headed in.
I think the second half against Azerbaijan, there was plenty of that happening, and eventually we did get a goal from it. And I think that you'll look. There's no point in us getting sucked into this.
No, it's just one part of it. Certainly in terms of getting the ball down, absolutely. But we're talking about the key fundamentals of the game not changing. And even the modern game, I'm looking at top-class defenders, world-class defenders. Now, even the likes of Van Dijk, when he's got a turn, Paul, outside his penalty box, he's got to run back quickly towards his 6 yard box and defend the cross into the box with lots of movement in and around the people darting across the front of him and spinning off the back of him and lots of bodies in. That, even now in the modern game, as good as you were, that's not easy. That's the toughest place to defend for me in that situation. Rather than being parked on the edge of your box with teams passing the ball across and in front of you and you're just being comfortable there.
I think Ireland are trying to do that. They just have been incapable of it because, you know, the way the games have gone. I think we have tried to create chances. It sounds a little bit like you're saying we're not trying to create the chances. And
no, I think we are, but I think it's always when we've either conceded a goal or something, and we're desperate for a goal, so now we're throwing everything into the box, and we're trying to compensate for the goals with the one or two goals, maybe the, you know. But we're trying to get a goal back. So, and you will do anything to get a goal back in a match, especially if it's in Dublin and stuff like
and
that.
And I'm not talking desperation stuff. You're talking the extreme, Jared, chasing and putting balls in from 40 yards on the
Even against Portugal, when it was 1-0, we were still creating chances.
Absolutely. This is just one weapon in your armour. You think back even to the summer, even the goals we scored on this team, the game against Andorra, Paul, I don't know if you remember it, in the summer over there, the goals we scored over there, crosses into the box, Jason Knight putting brilliant cross into the box from the left hand side as well, good delivery coming into the box, runners arriving. That's brilliant football. That's difficult to deal with as a defender.
Exactly, and I love that, Kenny. Honest to God, I'm an Irish supporter, and I love seeing them playing. I love seeing them mixing it up, and no one seems to want to mix it up anymore. They just want us doing a certain
have a certain identity. Yeah, I know.
Certain identity, and it's a strict one. And if you break out of it with Stephen at this moment in time, it's not a good thing.
Well, just last point on this, right? If Conor Harrigan had scored against Slovakia, which was exactly that move where there is a ball that's fizzed across, if that goes in, I think the whole mood music changes and we end up going to the Euros. More than likely, we beat Northern Ireland. Certainly a possibility anyway, in the next game after that. And things change. So look, I did want to ask you about the rising centre-back stars that we have. So Dar O'Shea, obviously, unfortunately, horrific injury that he suffered at the moment. Fingers crossed he's going to come back. But
he's a good footballer. We need him back. We need someone.
Andrew Omobamadeli, right? If O'Shea comes back, we've got O'Shea, Egan and Duffy, and then Omobamadeli either starts and one of those doesn't play. Or one random idea that we had a little bit earlier on in the show is it possible that he could play six for Ireland, central midfield, in the style of, I don't know, you for example, a brilliant centre back who can also play.
No, you can't play that many people drunk on the piano. but the kid, sorry, you said his name for me there.
Oh, Omobamadeli.
Yeah, well, he was just sensational. The way he just strode out of defence with the ball, and he was so calm and he was so cool, and it's just great that he's. He's an Irish player. We need people like him who just keeps calm.
There's a couple of them. Nathan Collins as well, obviously bought for big money, Paul, at Burnley, 16 million, like, good reputation. He was injured there for the last squad, just missed out, didn't he? But he's another one potentially could step up.
And I think they're coming through, and that's why you can praise Stephen on the one hand, and then you look at something else and you go, Stephen. I honestly think we've got a good team there, but I think we need to just mix it up a little bit and allow them to say, can we play what we see? We see different things. And on a football pitch, footballers will actually tell you this. They see different pictures than some, when you're sitting on the bench and stuff like that. So they need to learn to just, I don't know whether they're allowed to do this or not, but They just need to be allowed to play their own game. And I would think more times than not, if players are allowed to play the way they would like to play, that it will bring something off that you said, I didn't see that, and that's actually quite good, and it ended up in a goal.
Could any of those centre-backs step in and be the solution to the defensive midfield issue that we have? There's not a lot of players coming through who could play.
Maybe O'Shea. He seems to be
He's good passing. He's good passing ability. Darry, he's got that big switch. You would have known, so Paul, when he cuts inside, he hits that big 40. Yeah. I wouldn't be as pessimistic as Jared about that centre midfield. I see a little bit coming together, Paul, in that centre midfield. Josh Cullen, like, had a quiet summer in terms of the games, but he played well. And he's one of them, Paul. He's under the radar. Wouldn't say anything exceptional, but just gets around the pitch, keeps it simple, sees danger, makes interceptions, tackles. Jason Knight's another one, Paul, who I really like the look of. He wasn't available. He's another one that can come back into that centre midfield. You talk about Andy Townsend, Paul, in terms of that legs to legs and dynamism in that central midfield. Potentially Jason could give us that when he comes back in a kind of midfield two or a midfield three. So there's a little bit coming together there for me in personnel in the centre midfield.
A bit of strength and depth.
Yeah, wouldn't be as pessimistic and as downbeat and as negative.
I'm not being negative. I'm suggesting.
No, you're not actually, because they were the two players that I would have said, leave these kids alone and let them try something themselves, because they're actually very good footballers as well, and they don't mind getting the ball, and they can take it, and they can, you know, pass it around and stuff. They are going to be the essential, I think, to what we're... But that's what I'm saying about the players who know when to change it up. You've got to know when if we're 1-0 down and stuff like that, you've got to know the people you want to pass that ball to, and they're two very bright footballers.
I know you obviously pay a lot of attention to what's going on at Villa. After Grealish left,
yeah,
there was a bit of concern about what the team would look like. John Terry stepped away. There was a bit of change in the backroom team. The season started with a defeat against a newly promoted team where things didn't look great. And then Chelsea spanked them. And it's like, uh-oh. But then the performance last week against Everton was really, really good. And Buendia didn't even start, didn't actually play. You're like, there's proper strength and depth. Leon Bailey looked sensational for the 21 minutes that he was on, completely changed the game. How do you feel? What's the truth in your mind about where Villa are at the moment?
Dean Smith, I think, has been a fan for years and stuff like that, and then to come on and be the manager and stuff like that. I think he's got a great perspective on not doing things too fast, where he knows it's going to put us back, and not doing things too slow where the fans won't come with him on this journey. So I think he's doing a great job. I think the players we bought in, you know, you've got 100 million from Jack Grealish. I think it's all worth, and that's why I said Jack owes us nothing. Jack Grealish owes Villa nothing. He's been a fabulous footballer. He stayed until he got us out of the EUL, or the Championship. I forget the numbers anyway. But Jack was such a special player that he's going to take some replacement and stuff like that. But Dean has gone around and he's brought in these players, and Bailey's goal the other night was magnificent. I wish they wouldn't slide around on the knees though after they score goals, because I think that might cause one or two of the injuries, really, to be honest.
Especially when they hit the pitch and go dunk straight away. There's no slide.
I've seen it as well. You've seen it as well, Kenny. they jump down on their knees and then they go on their faces and stuff. And I'm thinking, why don't they just say stop doing that?
Even Ronaldo's got that twist now and pivot in the air.
Yeah.
And it might be an age thing. I look at him doing that and I'm thinking, oh, be careful. Yeah. That's like cruciate. That's potential cruciate in the making. Seriously,
honestly,
you know what it's like, Paul, when you land.
Statler Molder
a bit off centre, yeah. Paul would know better than me.
It is true. Like if you owned a Ronaldo, which most of us don't, but if he's up there doing a ballerina move, you're going to go. Some ballerinas break their ankles when they come down. And it's not for me anyway.
I remember Ruud van Nistelrooy doing a slide once, and the slide gets interrupted midway through, and he falls over, and you're like, you've literally just done your ACL 18 months, 2 years ago. Stop doing it.
On your own.
Paul, what was your most outrageous celebration? Can you remember one when you thought 10 seconds after, oh, I wish I hadn't have done that? Embarrass myself.
It has to be scoring for Ireland, doesn't it? And I just jumped up and I was like some sort of young one. And seriously, I just punched the air and I just thought, oh, that just looks so...
That was it. That was the worst
A future, I just stuck the finger up because I just thought, just run along with your finger up saying, I scored one.
Alan Shearer style.
Alan taught me an awful lot of things. Yeah.
What about the situation at Manchester United? How confident do you feel like they're actually building a team that can properly challenge for the title this season?
Yeah, to be honest, Jared. Yeah, and I'm still a United fan as well, but I'd love them to. Obviously knock City off their perch, and I think bringing Ronaldo back was a huge thing. But I don't know. Having watched some of the games and the young boys' game as well, I'm thinking, is it going to be as relevant as we think it's going to be? You know, I think everyone thinks having Ronaldo in your side is going to win you the league. And I'm thinking maybe not. Maybe not this year.
The point you made about Dean Smith, I think, is important, that the Villa fans believe that he is one of their own, and so therefore they give him a bit of extra time. It feels like the Man United fans, the real Man United fans certainly, feel the same about Solskjaer, and they're willing, so long as there's clear signs of progress, they're willing him to succeed and they're willing to allow him some room to make mistakes. Is that fair or has that run out?
No, I think that's fair. I think that's very fair. But I just think if Ollie makes too many more because of the... I'm trying to think who the kid was that he had on, and he got booked, and then he went off and stuff like that. He's got to be a little sharper, I think, in the people he brings off and brings on and stuff like that, because I think someone got booked, and then he let him stay on the pitch, and then 2 minutes later, I think
some of Fred's last year.
It was as well, yeah.
Well, I think it was young boys as well, Paul, wasn't it? Last week he had a few big decisions there with the sending off of Wan-Bissaka in terms of who to come on and off, and you know, there's a body of opinions that didn't get that right.
And that is when I felt like that's when I feel like he's not a seasoned manager, because a seasoned manager would be going, Jesus, now I need to make a decision, but I have to make the proper decision because this could cost us the game. And but I think it's only when they lose the game that we say this. But truthfully, I think Ollie's got so many friends in and around there simply because he was a magnificent footballer. But Frank Lampard had the same at Chelsea. And eventually they just ran out of time with him because but I'm hoping Ollie can hang on. But at the same time, I don't know whether he's got that mentality that some of the older managers have, where they can settle things down by just telling the defence where to go and midfield players where to go and protect your certain areas and stuff like that.
Paul, so, as a Man United fan, when you see someone like Conte hanging around, still hasn't got a job, Antonio Conte will probably be the case for the whole of the year, and you're talking about there somebody, a manager sees a clearly defensive setup, sets up a team, big decisions, big personality. You look across at him, would he be somebody potentially you'd like to get hold of? Do you think he could put it all together there, pull it all together at Old Trafford, all the pieces?
Anything bad to happen to Ollie, but I do. You look at Conte, and you just think football through and through, and he wants more on his CV, and he wants to be up there as known as being the best here, the best everywhere. And he is a great manager. Yeah. He's passionate. He shows his passion as well. Well, all Italians do, don't they? But he really does show that he's in love with the game, and he'd be magnificent, I think, for Manchester United.
Paul, great to talk to you. Thanks a million for making time for us this morning.
Yes. Cheers, lads.
Nice one, Paul. Take care.
Cheers, Jack. Cheers, Kenny.
That's Paul McGrath there chatting to us this morning as an ambassador for Repack's Team Green. It takes just 2 minutes to join Repack Team Green at repack.ie/Team Green, and by joining, you'll be pledging to recycle more and help Ireland hit our EU recycling targets.